What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Den of Nerds podcast. I'm sitting down with a special guest, Matt Ramos, Soups of, would you say TikTok fame? Or how would you sort of describe yourself or whatever?
I would say all of it. I wouldn't just limit it to TikTok. I would say TikTok, YouTube, social media in general. Yeah. Like, myself as a creator, my number one goal is to be able to connect with as many passionate fans as possible. And that's why I'm just active on all social media platforms. I'm on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. I'm on all of it because at the end of the day, if we could get a bigger conversation around the things we love most, then it's a W for all of us.
100%. And that's one of the things that's so cool about like modern fandom, really, is the ability that, with the internet now, to you know, meet other fans, sort of congregate online, share experiences together. Like, I really didn't think, you know, and I mean, I'm a little bit older than you, right? So I didn't think when I was younger that this would ever really be a thing. I think the closest to what we have now was there were message boards, like when the prequels were coming out. And so like that was like sort of that first way. And I remember even IGN had message boards that were actually pretty popping, like the forums and whatnot, and that was like sort of my first entry into that. But now with what we have, it's absolutely crazy. But yeah, so you're on all these platforms. You definitely consider yourself an influencer, right? I mean, you do some pretty significant influencer deals, right?
I wouldn't limit it to just that, because I think as human beings, we're just all so complex. We're not just one thing. We're so many different things. For me, I consider myself a creator, but I also consider myself a host, a journalist, an entrepreneur, this, that. Yeah, for me, I never like to place limits on us as human beings because we're so complex and we have so many different talents. You yourself, Josh, like you're a creator, but you're also just a master at interviewing people and talking to people. And that also has its own set of skills that not many other creators have. So as human beings, we're so complex. So I never like to just limit myself to just one thing.
It's true. It's true. But you've been pretty successful in your sort of career, you know, and the ability to kind of take a platform and literally just kind of numbers, right? And like transfer that into something really big, like you said, sort of entrepreneurial in that sense. So, you know, why don't we start with you kind of talking about that and like your come up? Like, how did this happen? When did it sort of take off for you personally?
Yeah. So for me personally, since before I could even walk, I had such a passion for superheroes, movie, TV, pop culture. And then, you know, coming from a Hispanic background, you're kind of taught like, oh, in order to make it, you have to go through the education system and become a doctor, become a lawyer. If you want to get spicy, become an engineer. And for me, just blindly going through the education system, I was always questioning like my purpose, like, what am I here to do? Why did God put me on this earth? What am I here to create? And then when I was a 16-year-old kid in high school, I walked out of watching Venom with Tom Hardy back in 2018. And on that night, there was just something in me that said, man, maybe I should just be vulnerable and share my passion with the rest of the world. And on that very night, I took my iPhone 6, stacked it up on a couple of books, and I pressed record. And that is my first YouTube video where I ever showed my face, where I was ever talking. Yeah. And you guys can go back and rewatch it. It's like one of my first YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And in that video, like, I couldn't form a sentence. I was stuttering. I didn't know what I was saying. I was just all over the place. But that was the moment where I made the decision that I was going to be so vulnerable. And when you're vulnerable like that with the rest of the world, then you're only forcing yourself to grow and become better.
Yes.
So now over the past 4 years of doing this stuff, I mean, I started when I was 16, a junior in high school. Now I'm 20 and living on my own over here in Los Angeles. And over the course of the past 4 years, it's just been a nonstop grind. But at the same time, I love what I do. I love connecting with fans. And I'm so blessed for all of the love and support for the from the people that have gotten me to where I am today.
So two things on that, bro. So number one, Venom must have a really special place, you know, in your heart. You know what I mean? Like, you must have a special thing for like that Tom Hardy Venom. By the way, I love the Tom Hardy Venom. Some people dog on, you know, Tom Hardy Venom movies. I know they're not necessarily MCU quality, but number one, you must have such an affinity for that. And then number two, I just got to ask, because I did a similar thing where I remember I went out to Radio Shack. I already had the camera because like I had sort of some stuff from college, but I went out to Radio Shack and I got, oh man, I usually, oh, it is. I was going to say, I usually keep it by me at all times. This little blue microphone, you know what I mean? And I remember mm-hmm. the day, bro, when I got this, I went home and, you know, I thought my first one was pretty bad too. And I was just like, oh, whatever. But I want to ask, were you addicted to it like right away?
Oh, I was so addicted to it because as soon as I started creating content, I realized that my love for this is greater than my love for anything else. It's greater than my, I guess, my want and need to be accepted by other people. Because when I started doing that in high school, you know, I started getting made fun of. Again, coming from a Hispanic community, I grew up in Miami. That's like everyone in Miami usually tends to be Hispanic from some, you know, at some capacity.
Yeah.
And coming from that culture, like no one was making YouTube videos. Everyone, again, is raised to just go down the education system and work towards having a job that'll make you money. But so for me, I started making YouTube videos and pursuing this and being so vulnerable with myself. And again, being so, I guess, just open and putting my mistakes and my failures out there, because again, I couldn't form a sentence. I had a stutter. Yeah. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that I loved it. And I knew, you know, there was a certain level of certainty within myself that as long as I continue to do this and as long as I continue to get better and find different ways to become a better creator, that one day it's going to work out.
Yeah.
And now here I am, like a couple of years later, like again, I started with a stutter and not knowing what I was doing, but I just knew that I loved it. And now here I am. And again, it's just this entire journey has been such a blessing.
Yeah, man. You know, you've said a couple of times now, you know, being vulnerable, and it's kind of funny because I'm thinking about like back to some of my stuff where I guess there definitely is a big vulnerability with like putting content out there and putting yourself out there. Yeah. I remember personally, there were a couple things that I didn't know about my own, like, I guess, delivery, if that's the way to say it, that like people were pretty vocal about in the comments. You know what I mean? Like one for me was like lip smacking. So I remember I was I would do a video and, you know, do this and then do that. And I didn't realize it, but people were so vocal about it in the comment section that I literally sat back, man, and I was like, well, I gotta stop smacking my lips. And it literally improved my delivery. So like as much as like, you know, the comment section could be really toxic and like putting yourself out there can be weird, there were moments where getting that feedback from you know, just people out there on the internet, like adjusted sort of my cadence and my performance. Did some of that stuff happen with you, like when you were first starting out, like you're getting this feedback and how have you adjusted your content since then? I mean, obviously you don't stutter anymore, but like what's the, you know what I mean? Like, what was that like, sort of building your content muscles?
So for me, I guess the mentality I've always been in ever since day one is, how can I best serve the people that are watching me? You know, I remember there was a point in time where I would like run upstairs to my mom and just literally just be jumping like all over the place because my videos were hitting double digit views.
Yeah.
Instead of just 9 views, I was hitting 10 views. I was seeing those double digits on YouTube. And, you know, as time went on, I was constantly in the mentality of I wasn't asking myself, how can I get more followers? How can I get more views? How can I get more subscribers? I was asking, how can I make my content better? How can I better serve the 10 people that are already watching my videos? And through that, I found just little things. Maybe I could invest more time into learning how to edit. Maybe I can invest more money into better equipment so I have better camera quality, better audio quality. Maybe I can invest more time into just coming up with better video ideas and asking my followers, like, what type of content do you want to see from me? So I was constantly in the mentality of, how can I get better? And I'm still in that mentality today. And I feel like, again, when you're trying to become a successful creator on social media, there's a lot of people that are they're asking, how can they get more followers? How can they get more views? Instead of, what can I give? Mm-hmm. What more can I give?
Yeah.
Because as long as you're in that giving mentality and trying to constantly get better to better serve your audience, you know, that's the best way to grow.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I know we share some of the people we sort of follow on social media that are either entrepreneurial or like kind of motivational, or, you know, when it comes to YouTube, there've been a lot of great people that I've sort of looked at as, you know, how do you do this? Like, how do I hook the attention more? How do I, for, you know, be more succinct with the information I'm trying to give out? How do I do this faster so that the info gets them in a timely manner? You know, so yeah, there's a lot of that stuff, and I think that definitely improving your content quality is the way forward. You know, like you said, a lot of people want the numbers, but they're not willing to kind of get in there and tinker. And I have similar experiences, man. I remember, you know, just watching those videos go up and like starting to hit like thousands of views and stuff. And then I remember my first video that ever popped, it was like 14K, right? Which for me, I was like, dude, what? I was like, 14,000 people watch this? Because I had been like, you know, doing a whole bunch of other stuff. I was doing like comic books. And I was like, dude, I don't think 2,000 people have even read my comic. You know what I mean? And I'm like sitting there and thinking like 14K, like this is wild. And it really does like get its hooks into you if you love content creation and you get that kind of immediate satisfaction. But I want to kind of take it to the opposite end of the spectrum because, you know, you had a crazy year last year. I've been just sort of admiring some of the stuff that was going down for you in 2021. I wonder, were there any moments that were like, I'm here? Not that you're satisfied, but like that you were like, yo, like I have made it. This is like a dream. Like, were there, like, what were some of those moments?
So for me, the first moment that comes to mind was on the day of the Black Widow premiere. On that day, I got to walk my first Marvel red carpet. And, you know, that event was just so special. That experience was just so special to me personally, because back in 2019, when I was starting my senior year in high school, I got out a white poster board and I started to write down all of my goals and all of the things I wanted to do in this industry. And at the top of it, I wrote, I'm going to get invited by Marvel to the premiere for Black Widow.
Whoa.
And then the pandemic happened. Mm. And then right there, Black Widow got delayed. Like, it got delayed 2 years. We just went into like this dead zone where there was no content coming out. Hollywood completely shut down. And that's where I started to attack TikTok and create on TikTok and use that as an outlet to grow and reach other people. And then 2021 came around and so did Black Widow. And, you know, what's crazy, another crazy part of that story is that once I wrote out my goals on that poster board, I actually went and I bought the red bow tie that I was going to wear to that premiere.
Oh, I love it, dude. Love it.
2 years, flash forward 2 years later, I get invited to the premiere for Black Widow and I wear that same bow tie that I bought two years prior. And yeah, that was just such a special experience for me because, you know, to be able to say that I grew up reading the comics, I grew up playing with the action figures, I grew up dressing up as these characters, and now I'm walking the red carpet for these movies. It's just, it's a dream come true. And yeah, dude, it's so surreal to me.
Yeah, that's sick, dude. And then to have bought the bow tie and everything, man, that's like some serious like full circle, you know, kind of, you know, attract these kind of things to you situation. That's dope. So obviously that's a cool one. Were there any other ones where you were like, I think you and I talked a couple times around the Miami Heat thing, and I just thought that was fascinating. And I was just, you know, I really like how you view brand and how you view content. We're gonna, you know, get into that a little bit more as well. But like, yeah, like any stuff like that, like just kind of do the same kind of thing.
Yeah, the Miami Heat collaboration, that was another dream come true. You know, I grew up being born and raised in Miami, like the Miami Heat. Those were like my real life superheroes, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh. Yeah. Those are my real life superheroes. And, you know, I just have such a deep love for Miami and its people. And that's home for me. That's always going to be my home. So for our hometown team, the Miami Heat, to reach out to me wanting to collaborate. And, you know, I still have like the screenshots of the emails of them reaching out to me. Like I have that framed. And yeah, like being able to announce that sponsorship, that collaboration and announce that to the world, like Soups X Miami Heat, like that's something I never thought would happen. Mm-hmm. But that's just like I can't really explain that. That's just like the universe willing it into existence. Like yeah. It was meant to happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it did.
Yeah, dude, it's hype. I was like, this is awesome. And I know that like, you know, with your vertical and like doing the nerdy stuff, it's not a direct one-to-one. Like it's not like every, you know, follower of yours is also like into basketball or any of that kind of stuff. But I just thought it was so damn cool. And I admired like your ability to just go for it. I was like, dude, this is awesome. And, you know, I know they scouted you via TikTok, you know, and you and I have talked about this particular point before, but I wanted to just ask you again and sort of articulate it. Like, how do you view like brand and content and like this sort of growing space? Because there's like legacy media and, you know, some institutional stuff that still has a place. But then there's, of course, like, you know, people like you and me and this whole other world now of people engaging with the properties they love. Right. So like, I don't know, man, like what do you think of it? And you've sort of come up in, at least from the TikTok perspective, like a sort of golden age of like content on there. So like, what do you make of this crazy thing we're all doing and where do you think it's going?
Well, I think it's only going up from here. You know, when it comes to like all of the social media platforms, the way I view it pretty simply. You know, you have, let's say it's high school, you know, in high school lunch, you have all of the different tables with all of the different friend groups. You have a table that's Instagram. You have a table that's YouTube. You have a table that's Twitter, Twitch. And then there's this new table, TikTok. So you have all of these different tables with all of these different groups of people. And as a creator, your goal should be to reach as many people as possible, to touch and inspire and entertain as many lives as possible. So for me, I've never just sat at one table. I've gone to all of the different tables. And through that, I've been able to reach so many different people. And I think that should always be our goal as a creator, again, is to not sit at one table, but to go to all of them and try to garner a bigger conversation around the things that we love. Because now, as we're moving into 2022, Hollywood's back. Marvel's rolling out with an absurd amount of content. Yeah. So is Star Wars. So is DC. We are heading into the golden age of media. Yeah. And it's coming back stronger than ever. And I feel like because of the pandemic, now social media has become more part of this experience than ever before. You look at a show like WandaVision. WandaVision wouldn't have been what it was without social media. But you know, coming off of right now, Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
Spider-Man No Way Home would have been what it was without social media. So now social media plays a role in the way we experience these new pieces of content. And it's just the greatest thing ever because I feel like it only elevates it.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%, man. There's so much that you said in there that I just totally agree with, especially like the WandaVision thing. You know, I've said to many people many different times that the big content creators and the big accounts on the various lunch tables, as you called them, they actually drove interest and speculation and the sort of hype train for WandaVision in a way that Marvel didn't do at all. Like they would dangle a little thing and then the conversation around it became a part of the experience, you know? And I agree that it's such an interesting thing. I had thought when I first started like coming in the game, like there were people that were doing this, making a living from it, and they sort of had their niche. But now, and I agree, maybe the pandemic accelerated this, but now I think even a lot of more casual fans of this stuff are engaging with it and having experiences outside of the content itself, whether it's watch parties, mm-hmm. breakdowns, live streams, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's fascinating. Like, how do you think the studios view it, though? Because it's sort of a double-edged sword, right? Because it's great, mm-hmm. but in a lot of ways, it's also something they can't necessarily control as much, you know? And so what do you think? Like, should they be afraid? What do you think?
Well, I think this is definitely uncharted territory for everyone, for the fans, for the consumers, and also for the studios as well. Because now, even though we're getting massive amounts of awesome content, now the question is, and now I think, you know, as like the industry, this is where the focus is going to go. How do we digest this content? Because if you look at every industry, every industry has had kind of like this revolution, except for movies, shows, entertainment. So like, let's say music. I can give you a song, Josh, but how are you gonna consume that song?
Right.
Are you gonna just listen to it with earbuds? Or do you wanna go experience it in a concert with the singer performing it to you live?
Yeah.
The Super Bowl, biggest game of the year. It's coming up pretty soon. Do you wanna just watch that game alone by yourself at home? Or do you want to throw a party because it's the biggest game of the year?
Right.
Now, when we look at movies and shows and all of the awesome stuff that's coming out, sure, it's awesome. We're going to be satisfied as fans. But how do we elevate the experience of consuming that content? Mm. You know, something you and I have been doing for quite some time now is watch parties. Watch parties are something that galvanize the community on social media, and it makes this experience of consuming the Disney Plus shows so much more enjoyable. Recently, back in December, I rented out a theater for 500 fans, and 500 crazy people came together and we watched Spider-Man No Way Home. Yeah. And it was a live experience. Yeah. I saw people that messaged me to this day saying that event, that was like the greatest event of their lives, and they weren't able to experience No Way Home the same with sold out audiences elsewhere, because, sure, you know, I'm known for my energy and passion, and people knew that when they were showing up to that event, the energy was going to be through the roof. And it was, yeah, it was like we ascended to a whole nother level.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I guess the biggest question in this new era is, how are we going to consume content, and what's the funnest way to consume it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a part of it, you know, and the thing that's cool, like for me, is that I think the studios don't have to be worried. Like, they should be on point, and they should be considerate of a lot of different, you know, sort of uncontrollable elements. But ultimately, like, they should just kind of kick back and let content creators do their thing, because, like, I don't know if that they'll be able to sort of recreate these kind of things. I think there's an authenticity and sort of just a more real feeling that a lot of people get sort of experiencing this with a particular personality that they resonate with or somebody on social media. And so, like, the things that you've done, I guess what I mean to say is that, do you think the studios are going to try to sort of co-opt this sort of thing and, like, you know, get you to do some official stuff and, like, cut you a check? And I know you work with them, and you did something similar with Koi, right? And the opening night. Like, what do you think about that? Because, like, I'll just tell you, like, my personal thing is, if they're cool with it, like, that's good. But if they mm-hmm. start to try to control it, that's where I think things are going to get messy. And not all studios are the same, too. So, like, Disney's pretty chill on stuff. Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. not so much. Like, I've had my beef with Warner Brothers and content and copy strikes and all these different things. So, yeah, man, like, what do you think? Do you agree that, like, studios should allow the personal brands of content creators to carry that burden? Or do you think there's maybe that they will try to, you know what I mean, like, grab it up and co-opt it? Because for me, that's just something I think about. I don't know if you share any of those concerns.
So I think it would be great for the studios to collaborate with the creators themselves and help elevate the creators and what they're trying to do, because at the end of the day, like, we all have the same goal, which is to elevate the content and the product that the studios are coming out with. So, like, for No Way Home, like, that wasn't an official Sony event. That was an event that I completely put together by myself.
Yeah.
And I paid for every single seat in that theater. So Sony didn't cut me a check. Sony didn't do anything. I just put that event together by myself. But, you know, people that work at Sony also saw what I did with this event, and they loved it. Yeah. They were all for it. But again, now moving forward, I think studios are going to be a lot more willing to collaborate with creators, and rightfully so, because at the end of the day, like, again, because we're becoming so important to the experience of the way this content and these movies and shows are consumed,
yeah,
it only makes sense for the studios to collaborate with us and help elevate what we're trying to do, because we all have the same goal.
So how long you think it's going to be till basically we flip legacy media? You know what I mean? Like, here's the thing, because I think in some ways it's already happened, right? Like, we talk mm-hmm. about Rotten Tomatoes. We use Rotten Tomatoes as an aggregate. And I'm speaking super generally, right? Just like, yeah, as fans. But, like, really, I think people are looking to certain opinions within, you know, certain YouTube, you know, things or whatever. Do you think it's already there? Or do you think that it's in the next couple of years where it's kind of flipped, and, you know, people like yourself and people that just make content out there, that becomes the new? That's where all the attention's at, and legacy media sort of falls away? Or how, yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely the direction where we're going, mm. you know, because a lot of people today, they value the opinions of creators over the opinions of you know, someone that works at a news outlet who is who might not be as passionate about the movie they're reviewing as a particular creator.
Sure.
Because like as creators, we're not, you know, we're not forced to talk about the movies and shows that we talk about. We talk about it because we like it. We're passionate about it. We're excited for it. And, you know, once we watch the movie or the show, we review it because this is something we've been looking forward to. And now we want to talk about it and break it down and go deep and see where this leads to that. So, yeah, I think people are valuing the opinions of creators a lot more now as we head into this new age over the opinions of like a traditional news outlet or journalist who, again, might not be as passionate about a particular film or project they're reviewing.
Yeah, 100%. Because like we've all seen those articles or those videos where you're like, you sure you know what you're talking about here? Like, you know what I mean? Like this, you know, especially in like Dragon Ball for whatever reason. I see this all the time, bro. Like American journal companies write articles about Dragon Ball and I'm like, yo, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like, it's very obvious and, you looked at a wiki page, you know?
Yeah. And people gravitate towards authenticity. Like, you know, when you know, people consume my content, Josh, when they consume your content, like they see how passionate we are about what we're talking about. Yeah. So of course they want to know our review, our reaction to a particular film or project, but Thor, chill. But you know, sometimes with people that work at specific outlets, they're like assigned a movie that they have to review, despite them not being a fan for like being a fan of the franchise or being a fan of the IP. So I think, again, people just gravitate towards authenticity. And as creators, that's our job, is to just be ourselves and talk about what we want to talk about and make content based around that. So
yeah,
authenticity wins always.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's shift into the hype train mode. You know, you're known for your energy. You're known for your hype. We're in a crazy spot with Star Wars. Let's start with Star Wars. You know, at the time of recording this, just for context for everybody, what's up, Thor?
Even Thor's hype.
I know, right? He's like, I am into this Luke Skywalker, bro. So yeah, we just got Luke. We haven't seen the finale yet at the time of recording this. Maybe you're listening, watching after that time. But the talk of the town, what everybody's, you know, getting into it on Twitter and stuff about Luke Skywalker, Grogu, Mando, mind blowing stuff. What did you think of this most recent episode, and do you want more of this? Because that's kind of a thing. There's some people saying we don't want AI, you know, generated stuff. Some people are like, let's go. What do you think?
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, Luke Skywalker is a character. I said this before we even saw the episode. I said Luke Skywalker is a character where he could be sitting down crisscross applesauce on a rock. And guess what? We're still going to be losing our minds.
Yeah.
Screen presence is so important. And Luke carries that. Mm-hmm. You know, with this last episode, we got Cad Bane. As soon as that man walked on screen, we're losing our minds.
Yeah.
Because again, these are characters we care so much about. So this previous episode we just got, I mean, it was a true love letter to Star Wars fans. We got Luke, Ahsoka, Din, Grogu, Cad. Like, I am so excited for this finale.
Yeah.
And this show has just taken such a wild turn from episode 5 to like now being what it is. It's basically Mando season 3 on steroids. And I'm just so hyped, man. I thought that last episode was incredible. I loved seeing Master Luke teach Grogu and all of the parallels and references. Truly a love letter to Star Wars fans.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I was blown away, and I was surprised, man, you know, leading up to that episode, you know, we did, you know, a ton of content leading up to it, of course, and the feeling out there with a lot of folks was like, they were telling me I was getting like too hyped up, right? Because I was like, bro, we're getting Luke. It's going to be wild. Like, here we go. And people were like, no, bro, it's going to go back to Boba in the robe and like, calm down. Like, don't freak out. And so, man, for me, like that episode hit and I was like a little boy again. And that's exactly why I love doing what we do, you know, to like get that feeling. And so look, man, for me, Star Wars has had a real up and down over the past couple of years, and the fan base particularly, and I definitely want to know your thoughts on this. The fan base in particular with Star Wars is a tough nut to crack. It is tricky. People are, they have a lot of attachment to the things. A lot of people didn't like sequels, and that created that rift online. But to me, if they keep delivering this level of wish fulfillment and like take us to this kind of stuff, I think Star Wars turns itself around and becomes maybe not as hyped as Marvel, like on a consistent basis, but yeah. like more in that direction. You think so?
Yeah, I 1000% agree. And it feels like, you know, Star Wars is kind of taking a page out of Marvel's book by building this whole new cinematic universe with all these interconnected shows and potentially movies, who knows? But yeah, honestly, Josh, it kind of feels more satisfying, like as a Star Wars fan, because again, because there's been so many ups and downs, and with Marvel, it usually tends to all just be up. It's more satisfying when you get dubs as a Star Wars fan. It's more satisfying when they overdeliver and, you know, Cad Bane shows up and you have tears in your eyes, or Luke Skywalker shows up and just the tears start flowing because you're like, finally, like, this is what we wanted to see. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave Filoni. Thank you, Jon Favreau. Let's go. This is what Star Wars should be.
I agree, dude. I agree. I'm all about it. So what else this year? Because we got Kenobi, and I mean, to a lot of folks, man, I mean, that's going to be like, because this is pretty wild. Like, I thought Boba would be dope, but I didn't like anticipate it being like this. Like, this is like head spinning, and the finale is probably going to pop, right? But, bro, this Kenobi has to be like 10x what we're getting right now. So, I mean, like, what do you think of Kenobi? Like, what are you expecting? Like, what do you want to see with that, man?
I mean, I'm expecting the best Star Wars Disney Plus show we've gotten so far. And here's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons I say that, is because you look at a character like Luke Skywalker, as I just mentioned. He could be sitting crisscross applesauce on the damn rock for the entire episode, and we're going to eat it up. We're going to be crying. We're going to be going crazy. Obi-Wan Kenobi is another one of those characters.
True.
Now, Boba Fett, on the other hand, I don't think Boba has, I guess, I don't think Boba is, it, or this is just a fact, Boba isn't as beloved as someone like Luke and Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
But now with Obi-Wan, you have a show that focuses on this character, and this character is the focal point, and it's dealing with a story where we're going to see Vader. We're probably going to see some Clone Wars flashbacks. Like, this is going to hit right in the feels. And man, I'm praying for some Qui-Gon Force Ghost action. But yeah, it's going to be a show that starts with Obi-Wan and it ends with Obi-Wan. Whereas like with Boba, again, because I don't think that character is as beloved as someone like Den, Luke, Obi-Wan, with the Book of Boba Fett, they had to kind of shift mid-season. Yeah. And now, because they shifted with Episode 5, and now the show is like focusing on Den and Luke and Grogu and all of these other characters that we just care more about, now we're just enjoying it. We're enjoying the show a lot more. But guess what? When it comes to Star Wars, it's hard to beat Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
These are, you know, top three most beloved characters in Star Wars history. So the fact that we're getting a show that's focused on both of them is going to be absolutely insane. And to me, it's crazy that we're experiencing this on Disney Plus. This is a story that's meant for stadiums, for arenas.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that it's a little bittersweet with that. I think the thing with Disney Plus for me, and with like Kenobi particularly, is I'm ultimately really grateful for the platform, because even though they've sort of stepped back from Star Wars movies for a couple of years, like John and Dave get the opportunity to just play around with these toys and make this fun content on like a yearly basis. And like, I'm just saying, like, in the past 5 years, I think all of my greatest, like, you know, feeling like a child moments have come from the shows, not really the movies. And that's like strangely powerful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it does kind of create a, you know, cause people will watch it like multiple times and like, it just adds to the buzz and all that. So I don't know. It's bittersweet for me, like, because I expect, especially with Deborah Chow directing, I think all of the episodes, right? So like, it's going to be cinematic. It's going to look great. And I would love to maybe experience that in the theater, but at the same time, the ability to experience that alongside with a ton of other stuff that's going to be, you know, Marvel stuff in the movies, and then having that on a weekly basis. And it's like probably going to be like 6 hours at least of content, right? So that's the other flip side. Is you don't get that in a movie. And I think we all wanted No Way Home to last forever, dude. I wanted it to just go on forever, bro. So, you know, the ability to watch it at a long stint is really fun. But I mean, you're the age of a prequel fan. Like you were young when you saw the prequels. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming you loved the prequels.
I mean, Clone Wars is what got me into Star Wars.
Okay, yep.
So for me, Revenge of the Sith is like the end game of my Star Wars. And now the fact that we're getting both Anakin, like, oh, Anakin is my favorite Star Wars character of all time. The fact that we're getting both Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor to come back, this is going to be the biggest thing ever. And again, like you said, like, I think this show's going to start off like, Episode one is going to be fantastic. It's not going to be like a slow burn. You know what I'm saying? Whereas like with some shows, it starts off slow and then it builds and it gets really good. With Boba Fett, with Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett, it started off pretty slow, but now it's building and we're getting some of the best Star Wars content we've ever gotten.
Yeah.
But with Obi-Wan, I think that's a show that you just have to use every single episode. You have to use every single scene, every single piece of screen time.
Yeah.
And I think it all has to be, you know, amazing because the hype has never been this high for a Star Wars project.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been in development for a long, long time. And I think, like, to your point, like, you can do all sorts of stuff with Boba because he's got like 4 minutes of screen time. I mean, like, dude, I love Boba, but like, there's not a lot there, right? Like, you can do almost do whatever you want. Obi-Wan and Anakin is like sacred stuff, dude. It's like something you must handle with care, you know? And so I think they do have to come out slinging. They've taken a long time developing it. And there was that sort of period where they almost like rewrote it. And they really like worked on the scripts. And then, of course, they scooped up Deborah Chow, who did the best episodes in season one. And so, like, dude, yeah, the recipe's crazy. And I think they know what's at stake. From what I've heard, they have packed this thing with, you know, back-end Boba Fett-level stuff, like, all over the place. Crazy possibility. So that's, of course, going to be epic. Just one more question before we move on to the DC stuff. What do you think about the Andor show? Because that is said to also be coming out later this year. And we don't have a ton of info on it, but I think they're putting a lot into it. So I just wanted, do you have any anticipation for Andor? What do you think of that?
Well, with a show like Andor, it's something that like I have to see more in order to get excited for it. But I mean, one piece of news or info that we know already is that Ewan McGregor is going to be in it as Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
So that alone is just, sign me up. If we're going to get more Ewan, sign me up.
Yeah.
So yeah, when it comes to Andor, again, I have to see more in order to get excited for it. And I got to see actual footage. But the fact that Ewan's coming back for that, sign me up. Yeah. I'm ready to go.
Dude, I kind of feel like that one might end up, because I don't know what it originally was, but I think that behind the scenes, some stuff has changed to be more Marvel, like you were saying, like a little more MCU. So Andor may have started out a certain thing, but now I think it has the opportunity to almost be like an Avengers movie. Because if you think about it, like Mon Mothma and like the rebellion at that time, there's a lot of familiar faces that they can bring in and do some really cool world building with. So, I'm personally pretty excited. But you're right. Like, we need something to sink our teeth into. There hasn't been a shred of, hype or clues or anything like that. But, moving on to the DC of it all, there's the Batman. There's the Flash. There's a ton of different things going on with DC. What do you think about this Batman movie? Because I don't know if you know this, but I'm known to be talking crap a little bit on the Batman. It's a little bit of a meme. I know. Yeah. So what do you think about the Batman? Why are you so hyped up on it, bro?
Well, I think it's going to be one of the greatest superhero movies of all time. I mean, I've never seen the entire world so collectively united on a movie that we haven't even seen yet. And yet everyone's looking at this movie and saying, yeah, that's a masterpiece.
I know. It's
like,
wild.
And this is amongst all the fandoms. They're like, there are some Marvel diehards that hate DC, but even they're turning their heads to the Batman. And they're like, DC has one.
Yeah. I know. Well, that's like, part of the reason why I like kind of chose to be mad about it. Cause I'm like, dude, everybody loves this movie. And we haven't seen it yet. You know what I mean? But obviously, you know, Matt Reeves is great. The feel of the movie, just like the way that it's shot with the color, and it definitely looks stylized. Like, I think you're in for a treat, you know, when you go in there, and I think it's gonna be really, really fun. I guess for me, ultimately, bro, it's just kind of sad because even though I am excited for that movie, despite the memes and everything, the Snyder Cut was it for me, and like I'm just a little salty that Warner Bros. Decides to do what they're doing supposedly instead of do like Ben Affleck Batman and some stuff like that. So I'm a little it's a little bittersweet for me, man. I'm Like, I want the movie to do well, but I also wish we lived in a world where we were getting Ben's movie, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, bro. I feel you. I love Ben as Batman. I mean, I literally have a piece of art that has Ben, Henry, and Gal right above my desk right here.
Nice, yeah.
I have art of Henry Cavill as Superman all around my entire house.
Yeah.
So I love the Snyder Cut so much. But when it comes to DC, I feel like the way that DC can really separate themselves from Marvel is by leaning into the fact that they don't have to stick to a certain formula. They don't have to stick to a certain, you know, pattern or tone or any of that. You know, DC can do whatever they want because they have nothing to lose. True. That's where we get projects like Joker. That's where we get projects like Shazam. That's where we get projects like Aquaman or Wonder Woman 1984 or this right here, The Batman, The Suicide Squad. Like, you look at DC's set of films that they've come out with the past couple of years, and they're all so different, and they're all, you know, from the tone to like the universe they're setting, they're all extremely different. But I feel like that's where DC can really thrive, by giving us different types of content, because, you know, there's a lot of people that like to complain that Marvel can't go as dark as DC can. Mm. You know, looking forward to the upcoming Moon Knight series, I'm very curious to see how dark Marvel is willing to go with that character, because Moon Knight is very dark.
Yeah.
But DC, they don't have to stick to a certain formula. We're about to get a very dark and gritty version of Batman that I'm very excited to see. And you look at all of the parts on the outside, Matt Reeves, Robert Pattinson, Zoe Kravitz, Paul Dano, Andy Serkis, like,
yeah,
this is going to be something special.
Yeah,
this is going to be something special.
Yeah, it might be. It might be okay. Yeah, it'll probably be pretty good. Lingering on Batman for a little bit, would you want to see, like, Superman and Wonder Woman in a Matt Reeves-type universe? Because we saw that there's costumes of them in the movie, right, from some leaks. So, like, would you want to see that? What do you think it would be like?
I would love to see a Superman and Wonder Woman, at least Superman, since now we've kind of been hearing that, you know, DC with the Flash movie, they're kind of fizzling out Henry Cavill's version of Superman and replacing him with Supergirl. I would still love to see Superman interact with Robert Pattinson's Batman, because I feel like, you know, because we live in this day and age where everything is in a cinematic universe, where everything is very interconnected, as great as the Matt Reeves Batman films are going to be, there's going to come a point where we're all going to be like, damn, I really want to see Robert Pattinson's Batman, you know, team up with Superman or another member of the Justice League. It's going to come to that point. Mm-hmm. And Superman and Batman, it doesn't get bigger than that.
Yeah, it's like, the best. It's the best.
World's finest.
Yeah. I'd love to see how he would tackle it, too, because, I mean, he's got a bead on Bruce for sure. I think, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me is he referenced the book Ego, right, which I believe was a Darwin Cook book. And it's really interesting, bro. Like, it goes into the psychology of Batman, and there's this, like, shadow self kind of stuff, you know, Carl Jungian type stuff going on in there, where he essentially acknowledges the Batman side of him as, like, this monster. And he says, like, you can hurt, you can maim, but you cannot kill. And, like, all these different things. So, like, I'm really into seeing that play out with, like, that style. With Clark, man, it would be so interesting to see, what would Matt do with Clark in this kind of a world? Do you know what I mean? Because, like, the normal Boy Scout-esque thing would kind of stick out like a sore thumb. But you don't want to just redo Cavill's Superman either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he'd want to do something unique. I'd be really interested to see what he would do with Clark in that world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think they should limit it to just Clark, because obviously Gal is amazing as Wonder Woman, and she's going to continue to do her thing with the future DC movies and the interconnected DCEU. But when it comes to the Matt Reeves projects, you know, another Superman project that we know is coming down the line, Michael B. Jordan is producing a Superman movie that's supposed to focus on Val Zod.
Yeah.
So I think that would be pretty awesome
if that took place
in the Matt Reeves universe. And then at some point we see Val Zod teaming up with Robert Pattinson's Batman. I know it's not Kal-El, and I love Kal-El. I love Superman.
Yeah.
But this Matt Reeves is a completely different Batman, telling a completely different story in a different universe. So why not?
I think the Val Zod thing would be sick, dude. And Michael B., like, he can bring an edge to things, but he also has heart, and he can be, like, you know, really genuinely lovable, and so I think he'd bring a lot of dynamic stuff to that role. And then, you know, and we're going to talk about the Flash, because they're getting into the multiverse and that whole thing. I think it would be cool to see a multiverse, like, Final Crisis thing. So could you see, like, the Batman, like Pattinson, eventually meeting a Henry Cavill Superman via the multiverse or something crazy like that? Like, what do you think about that?
I mean, that's what dreams are made of right there. I mean, just seeing Henry Cavill Superman grace that screen one more time.
Yeah,
that'd be a dream come true. I think right now it's very hard to tell because DC doesn't have, you know, they're kind of like, again, they're dipping their toes in so many different places, which is a good thing. It could also be, you know, there's also a flip side to it, because then you look at something like Crisis, where it's, you have this entire multiverse story with all of these versions of different characters. And it's like, I don't know if at this point in time they can do that. You
right.
Know?
Yeah, they're not quite. Maybe they're not quite there.
Like, I feel like, again, they're on a DC is on a great track record right now, like with the recent slate of films that they've come out with, and I think they're heading in the right direction. But in order to pull off something like Crisis, where again it's of that just that massive scale, I think that's something they definitely have to build to down the line.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because like I want to say that like James Gunn would be a really important part of that, just because like his time with Marvel and understanding all these characters and all that. But to be honest with you, like I actually like James Gunn's like sense of humor, that kind of stuff. It's not my personal favorite flavor. Mm-hmm. So like I know a lot of people enjoy Peacemaker. I don't really like Peacemaker. I didn't love the Suicide Squad movie. I liked it more than I thought I would. But yeah, like they don't have a Feige, and they don't have they don't necessarily have like a Taika Waititi. James Gunn is sort of the closest one because of his like stuff with Marvel. Do you think if they do have stuff connected, you think it's going to be James Wan? Do you think it would be Matt Reeves? Like, it, you know, because the other thing that's interesting with DC is Discovery's coming in, right? And there's now another merger, and I think Discovery is going to be looking at this IP, especially the DC stuff. It's big. So if you were in that boardroom or something like that, like what kind of advice would you give them? Is there a person? Is there a concept? Like something you would say, like, I think this is what you guys should be doing with your content.
Well, again, I would look at what's worked, and DC's direct competition is Marvel Studios. How does Marvel work? How do they have their business set up? They have the man at the top, Kevin Feige, and there's only one Kevin Feige, so it would be hard to find anyone to do what he does for DC. But I think you, at the end of the day, you have to have the fans running this universe. And I'm not talking about just like casual fans down the street. I'm talking about fans who are also producers and masters at creating films, because as much as a fan Kevin Feige is, he's also just a master producer who has been in the game for decades. So, again, I think you have to have someone like that at the helm of DC in order to cohesively drive this universe in a positive direction. And, you know, we're seeing it with projects like The Suicide Squad, Peacemaker. Josh, even though that might not be for you, I love Peacemaker. And there's a huge group of people that love what James Gunn has been doing with his DC projects.
Yeah.
So, again, I think as long as they have filmmakers and producers and executive producers that are fans but also are also master producers, then DC is going to be in a great place.
Yeah, amen. Real quick, we'll talk about The Flash and then we'll get into the Marvel stuff, because this is really what I want to talk about, you know what I mean? Yeah, The Flash, right? Kind of controversial at this point. You know, we don't know everything, and sometimes people get a little too worked up about rumors. But the rumor is, it's kind of like, bye-bye Snyder Cut, like, here's sort of the new DCEU. What's your take on this? What do you think this whole situation is?
Well, I think there's two sides to this coin. One, there's one part of me that's like, I love Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
I love Ben Affleck. I love Man of Steel. I love the Snyder Cut. I love all of that stuff. So for all of that to be erased, It hurts and it's bittersweet. But on the flip side of the coin, again, I think by DC erasing that part of their universe, they're starting clean. It's a clean slate.
Yeah.
And now they can again, by eliminating kind of all of that drama and that huge dark cloud from that point in time, I think now it's just a complete clean slate. And now they can, you know, sit down and reassess the characters that they have in their universe, what they want to do, and they can kind of build out the roadmap for the future of the DC extended universe in a way where, you know, it's going to be, it's not like Marvel, but the movie's going to coincide in a healthy way where they build off of one another. Whereas before, in the past, you know, DC has kind of just like, back when Man of Steel, Batman vs Superman, they were kind of just like going from one movie to the next. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whereas like now they can kind of really map things out with all of the characters they have after the Flash movie. So again, with this, I'm very curious to see what they do with the Flash. I love the Flash, but I'm very curious to see what they do with it, because it's very evident that they're going to use that movie to kind of rearrange their universe in whichever the way they want.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair take. Like, because obviously, like, I'm like upset about the Snyder stuff, and I'm like, man, this feels like such a waste and such a shame. To be fair, we don't exactly know what the movie's going to do. That timeline could still remain in its own thing, mm-hmm. right? So there's that's one point. But also, the clean slate idea is good, and it's like, I do want to see the universe continue. I want to see where all these characters end up. And if I think at the end of the day, for me, if it's dope, like if Supergirl is awesome, right? And like the whole thing is very interesting, what they did with her and, you know, what's going on with that. If Keaton is so good, you know what I mean? If like this stuff is great, like who could be mad at that? So I'm trying to remain optimistic for it. I want to see where it goes. But I do think that they sort of stepped in it a little bit by like that story coming out and them not addressing it really, because like even some of the people from Warner Brothers have been kind of quiet about mm-hmm. that. And if, from the Snyder fans' perspective, there's a lot of like little things that have happened that have sort of triggered people, and like anywhere from like subtle disrespect to like it really seems like they're just trying to shut that down. So I'm curious to see how fans will take the movie. You know what I mean?
I mean, I feel like time heals all wounds. I mean, we're seeing it with Star Wars. Star Wars was very divided once The Last Jedi came out. But you know, time heals all wounds. And now here we are in a day and age where it feels like the Star Wars fan base is kind of just very united with what they're doing and the direction they're going. And same thing with DC. Did they have a rocky past? 1,000%. But as long as they reevaluate their universe, readjust, and head in the right direction, then guess what? The fans are going to be behind them regardless. I mean, we're seeing it with the Batman right now. As much as you are a fan of the Snyder Cut and all that entire portion of the DC universe, there's no human being on this earth looking at the Batman right now and saying, I'm not going to go watch that movie.
That's true.
Because if you're a diehard DC fan, and again, you love the Snyder stuff, you're also going to watch the Batman, because at the end of the day, it's the character. It's mm-hmm. the character mm-hmm. that we care about. So again, as much as I love Henry Cavill's Superman, and as much as I love him playing the character, it's Superman that I love.
True.
So yeah, as long as you continue to see these characters,
this is true.
We'll be all good.
It's a fair take. Now let's get into the favorite dish for me, the MCU, baby. You said it. There's only one Kevin Feige, and it seems like to me, bro, the dude just keeps outdoing himself. And like, you know, No Way Home was like, the thing that's crazy about No Way Home, bro, is that it's a monumental generation type movie, right? And it's mm-hmm. also just a small taste of what's to come. You know what I mean? So what do you think this year? I mean, obviously, like, Doctor Strange 2 is the big one, and we're all like just putting our brains into pretzels thinking about what could be going on in that movie. That's a super big deal. But like you said, we got Moon Knight coming out, maybe She-Hulk, maybe Miss Marvel, maybe even more stuff. And then you've got like what, like Thor 4 at the end of the year, and just like, it's crazy. So
yeah,
what are you most anticipating? What do you see going down with Marvel, and how is Kevin Feige so good at what he does?
I mean, he's the greatest producer in the history of Hollywood. He is the GOAT.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's crazy, because after everything he's done for the MCU, like, he still sees more, and mm-hmm. he is not stopping until we get that more, until we see the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, all of these different characters introduced, and, you know, to hopefully one day see them all come back together again.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for everything the MCU has coming. You know, for me, my most anticipated project this year is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. It's going to be larger than life. Like you said, Spider-Man No Way Home was just a small taste of what's coming. Yeah. And with what excites me with a film like Multiverse of Madness is that they're probably just going to market this movie using Doctor Strange, Wong, America Chavez, and Wanda. And that's
it. I know, dude. It kind of drives me crazy. But at the same time, we're just going to be talking about it all anyways. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're just going to be talking about all the rumors, all the stuff. And it will create a sort of fun experience, you know, because, yeah, you're right, man. They're not doing anything. Like, I've seen the marketing looks cool, but I've seen, like, the Strange variants on the shirts and stuff. And, like, they might even still try to play up Evil Strange as the villain.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah it's going to be off to the races for us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the audience experience, the theater experience for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is going to be unlike anything we've ever experienced.
Yeah.
Straight up. Because,
so many
again, I feel like
dropping, just like, whoa, kind of moment.
I feel like, after Endgame, Marvel saw that by going so hard with fan service, with Endgame, they created the biggest movie of all time. Mm-hmm. Now, shortly after, Marvel is leaned into fan service once again. Spider-Man No Way Home was originally supposed to be a Kraven movie,
right,
but they saw how successful Endgame was by leaning into fan service. That's it. They said, screw it. Let's bring back all these nostalgic villains. Let's bring back Toby and Andrew. Let's do this thing. And then boom, Spider-Man No Way Home, the biggest movie post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Marvel's just continuing this trend of fan service, because this is what, I guess this is what draws the biggest reaction out of the fans, is the seeing the characters we have loved our entire lives come back and seeing them done justice once again. And Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness will be no different.
Yeah, man. And like, for me, it's crazy because he started out just trying to make fans like accept Iron Man, like just accept it. Like, you know what I mean? And we did. And I was just talking about this the other day, because like, comic book movies have always been cool, but they weren't always all great, bro. You know, like, there were some that were like, okay, like, that's a little wild, but all right. With Iron Man, he like elevated the genre, and he did something really, really interesting with that movie. At the same time, Nolan was doing his thing, and I love the Nolan stuff, but really, like, Nolan stuff, it doesn't like feel comic booky. It feels like real world. What he did with Iron Man was like, yo, like, I'm in a Marvel comic right now, and it's crazy. Mm-hmm. From there, he starts to introduce just bringing other characters together for like the Avengers, and you're like, yo, this is insane, like these different movies, all these dudes together, now it's crazy. Then you bring all different corners of the universe together in like Endgame and all that, and he's like sitting there like, well, what do we do next? Like, how do we, you know what I mean, like, how do we break that, dude? I did not think in a million years you would get Toby and Andrew to come back to the role of Spider-Man. This is a mind-blowing concept, right? And what's so cool about it is he gets to use it as a business card. Whenever he takes the next meeting with, you know, Hugh Jackman, whenever he takes the next meeting with whoever, that's the business card. He could be like, well, you saw what we did in Spider-Man. You saw how people reacted. I can make it super easy for you. I can, you know, fans are going to love you, shower you, you know, $1 million for like 6 days of work or whatever. So it's crazy that he's able to dream that big, right? And then figure out a way to do it. Because, dude, like, some of these people do not want to come back. Like, from what I heard, like, the Toby thing was a little tough. Like, to get him to, like, he was interested, but, like, to get him to actually, like, go get in shape, get fit, you know, and do all these things. Like, that's a commitment. And Feige pulled it off, you know, obviously with the help of Amy Pascal and all that. But let me just ask you this. What are some of your favorite rumors that are out there for Multiverse of Madness? Because there's a ton. We don't know what's real or not, but what are some of your faves?
Well, there's two that really come to mind. One of them is John Krasinski potentially coming in to play Mr. Fantastic. The audience would lose their mind because we love him as Mr. Fantastic, even though we've never seen him as Mr. Fantastic. I mean, this is the most popular fan cast of all time. We thought we were going to see the aerospace engineer in WandaVision.
I know, right?
But now we're actually going to see, or, you know, we could potentially see John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic. Like, that would be insane. And then I guess the other rumor that comes to mind is Toby being in Multiverse of Madness, because, you know, for me, Sam Raimi teaming up with Tobey Maguire once again, that's just like that's everything, you know, child soups would have ever wanted to see. Sam Raimi and Tobey coming back together, and with a movie directed by Sam Raimi that's about the multiverse, it only feels right.
I think for me, one of them it's not one that people have talked a ton about, but I'm so interested in it, is Magneto. because I would love to see either one of them, because I love both the versions that Fox did, but I'd love to see him talk to Wanda, like, in a father-daughter sort of way, even though, like, technically speaking, that might not be his daughter or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've just always wanted that for her, and I thought maybe we would get it in WandaVision because they bring in, you know, Pietro that ended up being the boner, and I was like, oh, because I was like, I really wanted that, like, family, like, comic book connection, you know what I mean? So, like, Magneto to me would be great. The Krasinski one's dope, but my personal favorite might be Tom Cruise Iron Man. Like, bro, Tom Cruise Iron Man, like, RDJ is
crazy.
Dude, RDJ's the one, you know what I mean? And, no, you know, no disrespect to his thing, but Tom Cruise Iron Man feels like evil, bro. Like, Tom Cruise Iron Man feels like it, after, I forget what event it was, but when Tony goes evil and he got the all white armor in San Francisco, dude, like, a hard edge, like, not a nice guy type of Tony. And I would just like to see that, dude. Like, that's compelling stuff.
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, of course, Robert Downey Jr. is the GOAT, and no one ever, I don't think there's anyone that could play the character of Iron Man as well as RDJ did. But I think this would be a really cool concept by introducing variants of Marvel characters we already know and love, played by different actors.
Yeah.
You know, there's another rumor going around that we're going to see Captain Carter. Haley Atwell's Captain Carter.
Yeah.
Like a live action version of Captain Carter. Of course, we love Chris Evans as Steve Rogers and Captain America. But seeing Captain Carter would also be really freaking cool. So, yeah, I love the Magneto. I love the Magneto rumor because, like, Magneto's my favorite villain, like, across Marvel DC. I love Magneto. And I also love the rumor of, like, seeing potentially Charles Xavier.
Yes.
Because if there's anyone that can bring Wanda to her senses, it's Professor X.
I know.
And, you know, seeing the way they used, like, Jean Grey in the X-Men movies, I feel like it could potentially be something similar if they were to use Professor X in Multiverse of Madness while, like, him trying to get Wanda to come to her senses.
Yeah.
And, man, that's just going to be – that would be a very interesting matchup.
Yeah, 100%. That would be really compelling. And I think we're in – either way, like, no matter what they give us, because we really don't know. Like, I you know, and I try to know. Trust me, bro. Like, I try. And with this one in particular, it seems kind of – secretive, and there's like a lot of, like, you know, it seems a little different than Spider-Man. I don't know if we'll get the same level of leaks, and I'm cool, you know, I'm cool with surprises. Last thing I want to talk about, I just want to jump all the way ahead to Secret Wars. There's big rumors, bro, that all of this is leading towards Secret Wars, that basically the Russos have been working on Secret Wars this whole time. Like, they were playing with us, you know, like, oh, we're done, maybe we'll come back. No, bro, they've been working on it the whole time, workshopping this, and it's gonna be everything we're seeing right now with No Way Home and Multiverse of Madness, like, times 100, just all of it together. Yeah. So, like, what do you think? You think that's true? What do you think that could look like? What do you think?
It's going to be the biggest film of all time, no doubt. Like, it's going to be the biggest movie of all time because that is the end game of the multiverse.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that made Avengers Endgame, I guess, have such a massive impact at the box office was the fact that this was the culmination to everything that came before. Well, with a movie like Secret Wars, there you're bringing back, you know, childhoods. You're bringing back childhood characters. Like, people, like, you know, for me, Toby in a way raised me as a kid. Like, I grew up, I was born in 2001. I grew up being raised by those Toby movies. Same thing with the X-Men films as well. So it's like, if we were to get Secret Wars and to have all these iconic versions of different Marvel characters come back to tell that story, it would be larger than life. And I feel like that's definitely the route that they're going because, you know, now that they saw, I guess, again, the impact that Endgame had at the box office, it becoming the biggest film of all time, Marvel is going to try to replicate that. And Secret Wars is the way to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen you talk about this on, I think it was on Twitter. The other side of this that's really crazy is bringing back the OGs from the MCU, mainly Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans. And so that's really what it is. It's like, let's, because you're right. Like, it's like, so Endgame, it took all corners of the MCU together, mixed them up. It's crazy. Multiverse, now we're getting all this stuff. Secret Wars becomes every dope Marvel thing ever, all thrown together. It's going to be crazy. But then you also bring back the dudes that made it all possible with Captain America and Iron Man. And it's just like, I hope that that's where we're going, because that moment of them, the old nostalgia from all these other characters, but also the feelings I have about I Love You 3000 and all that, right? coming together. Like, that's just like wish fulfillment, you know, like
1000%. I mean, Josh, like if you look at a movie like Infinity War and Endgame, could you imagine those movies without Spider-Man?
No. Yeah, it wouldn't have played the same. No, because it's like all the moments that he's in elevate it. And also his relationship with Tony really elevates it, too.
1000%. And Spider-Man is the biggest Marvel character of all time. So it's like it would just feel like something was missing within that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? When Secret Wars comes around, there's no way you can bring together this entire universe with the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, the New Avengers, the Eternals, the New Guardians. There's no way you can bring together this entire universe and not have Steve Rogers and Tony Stark there.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
there's just no way.
Yeah, you have to, dude. And it's...
yeah. And it wouldn't diminish their endings from Endgame.
Right.
Because, you know, Tony died. Like, that version of Tony that we grew up with died. That version of Steve Rogers is old. He's not Captain... He can't be Captain America anymore. So if they were to come back in the future, it would be variants of them. So it wouldn't diminish their death, or it wouldn't diminish their endings in Endgame, because Endgame was the ending of that version of those characters.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, you know, it's interesting you say that. I don't know if I think they're going to do variant versions of them eventually. Like, I actually hope they do like a Hydra Cap thing or something like that. But I think the version of Steve we see might actually be the one that has the stones and Mjolnir. That, like, when he goes through the time thing, that he's going to pop up somewhere, either on Battleworld or something. You know what I mean? Because, like, we're seeing, like, the TVA. And technically speaking, Loki had a similar thing go on where he's just trying to zip out and he gets picked up by the TVA. So depending on what's going on with Kang, I think you could see that actual version. And maybe that actual version of RDJ as well, somehow. You know, Soul Stone, snapping, you know, some weird trick or something like that.
I mean... Yeah. I mean, bro, with a character like Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, he had the greatest ending superhero character has ever had in Logan.
True.
Like, that was tears every single time. So would us seeing him in Multiverse of Madness, would we be mad because that diminished his death in Logan? No, because it's a different version of the character.
Yeah.
Same thing with Iron Man. Same thing with Cap.
Yeah.
We got to see them come back down the line.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think that's going to be special. And I think that... it's dope to be doing what we're doing, knowing that that's on the horizon, right? Because, like, all this stuff's really fun. Like, it's crazy. It's a blessing. But, like, bro, the Russo brothers, I just feel it in my bones, man. I mean, what's left to do, right? Like, you talk about, like, growing and trying to strive, right? They did the impossible with those two movies, Endgame and Infinity War. They did the impossible. What's the next impossible? Well, they've already told us. They said it in interviews. It's Secret Wars. It's bringing that in, doing that level of a thing. And I think that Feige wants it bad. I think they want it bad. And I think Feige could even retire after Secret Wars. Like, he might be like, okay, boom, 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 Secret Wars.
I think so too.
And I'm like, I'm out. You know, this is this is my body of work, which would be crazy. But, it's a special thing to be looking at that in the future, man, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to come back to this very interview in 5 years, clip this, and then use it for promo for Secret Wars.
Yeah, 100%.
Because, you know, we're talking about it the same way we talked about No Way Home, the same way we talked about Endgame and Infinity War back in the day. So it's inevitable.
Yeah,
it's inevitable.
It's inevitable, just like Thanos. Well, dude, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you doing this. Do you have anything you want to leave the people with? I mean, obviously, you're all over. You're at all the lunch tables, so they can find you everywhere. But is there anything you're working on you want to let the people know about? Any kind of surprises you got coming up this year?
Well, I'm certainly working on a ton of different projects and a ton of special things. But I'll wait for the right time to reveal those projects to all of you guys. But I want to thank you guys for taking the time and watching this interview and joining us for this awesome conversation. Again, Josh is doing some awesome work over here at Den of Nerds, so make sure to stick around for whatever he has going on next.
Thanks,
and I appreciate you guys for tuning in.
Thanks,
much love.
Man. Much love to you back. And we'll have to do this again, man. Maybe after another big event film, we'll get together and just kind of see where everybody's at.
Let's do it.
All right, brother. Take care.